Good morning, everyone, and welcome to FYI. We are here from Plant-Based OKC, as usual, on this fourth Tuesday of every month.
Fourth Tuesday of the new year.
Yes, it's very exciting that people maybe are going to be tuning in today to Plant-Based OKC to learn about getting healthy in this new year.
And let me just jump in here and say, it is a shame that we're on radio, because you two look splendid today.
Well, I wish everyone could see all of us, because
yes,
we are
yes.
exuding the plant-based
I'm telling you.
Health, aren't we?
Absolutely.
So, I am Andrea Conway, and I am here with my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway, who's a board-certified orthopedic surgeon here in Oklahoma City, and our good friend, Randy Titone, who helps us with all of our plant-based endeavors.
Good morning.
We are plant-based
OKC.
That's right.
Those of you who maybe are just now tuning in and have never heard us before, we talk about a healthy way of eating that some of you may or may not be familiar with, and that is a whole food plant-based diet, which means it's free of all animal products, which is obviously red meat, pork, fish, turkey,
chicken,
shrimp,
every kind of
crawdads,
animal product you can think of, including, which always gets left out, things like dairy, eggs,
cheese,
yogurt, milk,
cow's milk.
We do eat, there is some non-dairy milks that we talk about. So that's kind of the gist of what we are here to talk about. And we asked if any of you have any questions while we're talking today, please feel free. We love to have callers during our segment here, and it's 672-1220. So anytime we're talking about something that you might have a question about, we would love to hear from you. So we also have a Facebook page, and it goes by Plant-Based OKC. So if you're on Facebook, we would encourage everyone to follow us. We also have a website, plantbasedokc.com, and on there we list our monthly events. And so every month we host a seminar where my husband goes over the science behind a whole food plant-based diet. And we like to come at this from the angle of very scientific information. It's unbiased. We're not there to sell you anything, to sell supplements, to try and get you to buy anything from us. This is a free seminar to provide the science behind why a whole food plant-based diet can prevent and reverse most chronic diseases, including heart disease, cancer, diabetes, autoimmune diseases, and many, many others.
And even obesity.
Yes, even obesity. So we talk about that at this seminar when we hold it once a month. It's free to the public, but we do ask for RSVPs because our room is limited and the number of people we can get in there on a Saturday. And I also serve a plant-based meal. So if you go on our website, you can get the dates of the events and you can sign up for your spot. The next one at the hospital, this is held at Community Hospital at 3100 Southwest 89th Street in South Oklahoma City. And our next event there is Saturday, February 25th at noon. Again, this is on our website, plantbasedokc.com. And then we also hold an event at Rococo at North Park Mall once a month. And this is more of a support group meeting where people that have maybe been to a seminar or eating a whole food plant-based diet on their own and just have questions. They feel like they're kind of doing this on their own because many times family and friends are not supportive or not doing the same thing. And so they want to be around people that are doing this and be able to ask questions. So this is kind of a support meeting. Again, there's no charge to attend this meeting, but Rococo restaurant does provide a plant-based menu, so if you'd like to order dinner, you can. And these are held on the first Monday of every month. So our next meeting coming up, I believe, is Monday, February 6th. And these are at 6 o'clock p.m. in the evening at Rococo at North Park Mall. And then, of course, we're with you the fourth Tuesday of every month here on KTLV 1220 AM. So please call in if you would like to ask any questions. So we asked our followers on Facebook if they had any questions they'd like us to address today. So I think we'll get started with that. And the first question we had was from Ernest. And he said, do you believe that a plant-based diet will reverse heart disease and type 2 diabetes for every person who follows a plant-based diet? So I'm going to let our good Dr. Conway start off with that question.
Well, the science would show, and so this isn't what I believe, but it's what the science shows, that...
You do believe it.
I do believe it, but it's not just your opinion. It's my belief based on science. What I've read in the science. And that is that at least 80% of all heart disease, diabetes, type 2, and cancer can be prevented or reversed by your what you eat and your lifestyle factors. So obviously smoking plays into that. I mean, that is a lifestyle choice. Physical inactivity is a lifestyle choice that increases your risk of having all three of those diseases. And so it can significantly prevent the progression of disease, and in most people reverse the disease if you go on a whole food plant-based diet. And the closer you can get to eating no processed food whatsoever, mm-hmm. I think the better the benefit that is.
Well, and so speaking of heart disease in particular, let's just recap really quick your story about heart disease. So those that maybe aren't familiar with how we even started down this path.
Well, I was like most people, blissfully unaware of the significance between what I ate and my risk of disease, whether it be heart disease or high blood pressure or cancer or whatever. Even though I am a medical doctor, that is not taught in medical school. It's not taught that what you eat significantly influences your risk of disease. And so about 7.5 years ago, an episode where I had left arm pain, and having had a strong family history of heart disease, I was concerned that was signifying that I had significant heart disease. So subsequent to that, I had a stress test, which I flunked. I had my blood drawn. My cholesterol was 494. My triglycerides were over 3,200, which at the time my cardiologist said that was the highest he'd ever seen. And I had an arteriogram, which is where they run a catheter from the artery in me. They went from my groin up into my heart and took pictures of my coronary vessels. And I had 85% blockage of my left anterior descending, 80% a little further downstream for that, and 70% of my right main coronary. And he thought that was too significant to stent. And so he thought I needed a triple bypass. And luckily, I had this test on a Monday. Bypass was scheduled on Friday. I came in possession of some knowledge that I could actually...
I think God interfered in a couple of ways in our journey here.
Well, that might be true. but I, you know, as luck would have it or God would have it, my wife actually ran into one of my partners who had a similar episode a year prior, and he said, you need to get him to read this book called The China Study. And so that Friday she came home with the book. That was the Friday before I had the test on a Monday. And I read that book, and in that book is mentioned a book called Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease by Caldwell Esselstyn. And because I couldn't work that Tuesday, I went and found the book and read it and became convinced that I did not need to have triple bypass surgery. And so literally one day I went from eating everything there is to eat in the standard American diet and eating a lot of it to eating no animal products. Within 6 months, my stress test was normal and my cholesterol had dropped to 115 and my triglycerides were down to 175 at that time. And I was taking a low dose of Crestor at the time, which can help lower cholesterol. But I have subsequently quit taking all that medicine, and cholesterol and triglycerides both under 100, done with what I eat. And there's not a drug that's ever been developed that can drop your cholesterol 400% or your triglycerides 320%.
Well, and, you know, I remember the day that I ran into your partner and he told me about the book and what he was doing. And he, you know, I said, "You don't eat any meat." And he said, "No." And I said, "Well,
what do you eat?
I could probably do that." But I said, "You don't eat any cheese?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Well, I could never do that."
Right.
Well, little did I know my life would be forever changed within 2 days from that meeting time. So obviously I, you know, was not going to allow him to do this by himself. I knew it was something that we both needed to do. And so
I don't think I could have done it by myself.
And we do encourage, when we have people come to our conferences and our events, we encourage couples to come, because I think it's very important for both of the members of a family to understand either why one person is choosing to do this and try to get the other one on board. Because I run into so many times couples who, you know, only one is trying to do it, and maybe that one is not the one that does the cooking, and so it just becomes a very difficult situation, and most of the time they get frustrated and end up...
And it can be a life or death situation.
Right.
I mean, I don't think there is any time it's too late to go on to this type of diet. I mean, my dad just passed away this last spring of heart disease, and... you know, he was in his 80s, and he had been through everything cardiac-wise known to mankind except for a heart transplant. And I kept trying to get him to make the change. He would not do it, and he ended up dying from the disease. That was his choice. And so, you know, I'm not responsible for somebody's reaction to the information. I'm just responsible for getting the information out.
And I do think some people think, you know, if they're, say, you know, even 65, 70 years old, well, I've had, you know, I've probably had this, or I'm just genetically predisposed to having it, I'm too old, whatever the case may be, thinking that it's too late for them to be able to make that change. The other thing I think people think is that, you know, they've gone in, like, you know, you were going to and had a stent, and the doctor says, okay, we took care of it. Or they've even had a bypass, and they think, okay, I now have clean vessels. And that's kind of a free pass to say, okay, I can do whatever I want now.
Well, and we've become, as a society, so accustomed to feeling like we've got to go to the doctor and get a pill or a procedure to fix our problem.
Because he's got to make you better, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, if you think about it, you've called your doctor, you've made an appointment, you've taken off work, you've driven over there, you've sat in the waiting room, you've paid a copay. By golly, you don't want anybody just saying you need to change your diet.
You know?
You're thinking, I need a pill.
I need something.
Yeah.
Or a procedure.
Or a procedure.
Don't leave a surgeon out.
You're right. Exactly.
Well, and I think, you know, us, like most people, I mean, he was 53 when this happened. And several of his friends, partners had gone through this situation. So in our minds, it was just that time of our life. You know, we're in our 50s. It's time to go have our angiogram and have our stent, right? And then you just go on about your business.
That's right.
I mean, it literally was that.
And that's what
we were that complacent with it. When I think back about that and the risks of those procedures, like, we acted like there was just no risk at all.
I know. I mean, and that's why I said I was blissfully unaware. I was blissfully unaware of a lot of things. One, I had no idea that stents failed at the rate that they failed.
Right.
Or bypass fails at the rate that it fails. bypass surgery, you know, it's a 43% failure rate after 12 to 18 months. When I read that study, and this was early on to this, so I wasn't that attuned to thinking that our healthcare system was really messed up. But when I read that statistic, it immediately said to me, I'm going to have to change what I eat. Because heart disease is caused by what you eat. It's not genetic. It's what you eat. A very little percentage, very small percentage of heart disease is actually caused from bad genetics.
But Even if it is caused by genetics, you can stop that.
Sure. Right, and you can change your genetics based on what you eat, which has been proven, which was also a concept the first time I heard that I had trouble grasping. But, you know, it just seemed like, you know, you'd go in, you'd have this procedure, and then you'd be well.
That's right.
But it doesn't work that way.
No.
How many times have you had a patient that, you know, you tell the story all the time about the guy that came in your office and was running and was healthy, goes in and has stents, and then it's like has significant ramifications from those and is no longer be active. I mean, it's just really struggling. There's lots of complications that can happen from those procedures.
I mean, it's not uncommon for me to see somebody in the office for a shoulder problem and say, okay, when did this start? Well, it happened on the angio table or it happened on the bypass table. Because your arms are out away from the side of your body, and that can cause your shoulders to start hurting. And especially, it seems to be associated with bypass, and I think it has to do with the fact that your chest is cracked wide open. That puts additional stress on your shoulders, but it's not uncommon for people to have shoulder problems after having bypass or stents. And so I had this one guy come in the office, and he was having shoulder problems, and he starts telling me his story, and I'm just shaking my head in disbelief. This guy was running 5 miles a day without any problems. He sees an advertisement on it for a calcium CT. He goes and has his calcium score, and his score is high, so they want to do a stress test. This guy's doing his own stress test on a regular basis every day, five miles a day.
Right.
So he has a stress test. They notice some changes on the stress test, so they do an arteriogram, and they end up stenting asymptomatic heart disease, which we know only increases your risk of having a heart attack or dying, does nothing else. And he has complications from the stent, and now he can't even run because he's had so much problems from the catheterization. This guy was very active, and now he's depressed because he was aware that he had an unnecessary procedure. But it's estimated that up to 85% of all cardiac procedures done in this country are unnecessary. That's $3.8 trillion a year is what we spend on.
Well, it's everybody having the mindset that we had. I mean, one, you get scared to death because somebody tells you they see something, you know, on the stress test, or they see something on a calcium CT scan, and you've immediately got to get that taken care of. But what happens is, you know, even if you don't have complications from a stent, it then gives you the mindset of, this is a free pass, you know, I'm good now. That's all taken care of.
Yeah, I see that quite frequently,
well,
too.
And the thing that I think is hard concept for people to grasp is that when you have calcium in your arteries, it's not just around your heart.
Well, that's true.
Right.
You know, so here we're going in and we're sending this around your heart, but what about all your other arteries that probably have calcification in them?
Right.
That's why so many people are losing legs.
Losing legs, low back pain. I mean, the most common association with low back pain is lumbar arterial disease. So what happens is you get the calcification in your lumbar arteries just like you do in your coronary arteries, and blood flow to those discs are impeded, and then the disc deteriorates and herniates, and then you start developing this low back pain which isn't just necessarily due to disc degeneration. There are a lot of, it's multifactorial, but it's most closely associated with lumbar arterial disease. And just like your heart disease can be reversed, your low back pain can be reversed if you start opening those arteries up.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with a rotator cuff. I tell people today when they come in my office, they have a rotator cuff tear. I say, by definition, you have heart disease of your shoulder. It's the same process. You have to have circulating endothelial progenitor cells, which are these cells that repopulate the endothelium, which lines all your arteries. But they also are necessary for healthy tendons. And the standard American diet really, really is poisonous to circulating endothelial progenitor cells. And so they're not circulating in your system if you're feeding yourself a bunch of added oil and animal protein. That's what kills them. And so it kills your arteries, small arteries that feed your tendons, and then you start developing all this tendinopathy. We like to, we in the past, we've called it rotator cuff tendinitis, and itis behind any word means inflammation, but it's not an acute inflammatory process. It is a degeneration of the tendon. Same thing with Achilles tendinitis. It's really better called tendinopathy, which is a condition of the tendon where the tendon degenerates. And it also degenerates because of arterial disease. Same thing with tennis elbow. With all the tendinopathies, it's associated with what we eat.
I think, you know, that when you think about all of the vessels and arteries that are having that, you know, to the neck and, the, you know, so strokes, I mean, just all those things.
And neck, discs in the neck.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I see people when they get into their 50s, is when I most commonly see people that come in the office that are in a lot of pain. And, you know, it's not uncommon for me to hear, I'll do anything to get out of this pain. And so that's my end. I say, well, I tell you what, why don't you read this book, Foods That Fight Pain, written by Neil Barnard in 1998. And it's prescient today as it was when it was first published. I mean, you know, there are certain foods that are associated with inflammation, certain foods that are associated with anti-inflammation. And you want to be eating the foods that are anti-inflammatory because all our chronic diseases are due to inflammation. Partly due.
And the foods that are fight inflammation are whole plant foods.
Because they have phytonutrients and antioxidants. So, you know, like cholesterol. Well, it's not just your LDL and your HDL numbers. It's your oxidized LDL that is really the bad actor. And so if you eat a bunch of phytonutrients that have antioxidants, then you're not going to have oxidized LDL. And so your risk of disease is going to be lower.
Well, as y'all were talking, I was scrolling through here because we, after the segment aired about foods that fight pain that you all did on Channel 4, I believe, last year, we had someone come to one of our seminars, and she had previously had either one or two back surgeries and was facing another one. And she was on 10 milligrams of Percocet every 6 hours and Lortab twice a day. She also had a prescription Demerol cream that she rubbed on her leg to try and help alleviate nerve pain. And now she says basically she takes Aleve just as needed. All of that once she changed her diet, which is more than remarkable, I would say.
Well, yeah. It's just miraculous.
It really is.
That plants can have that kind of effect. And that, so she did all that in a couple of weeks.
Well, right. And I think that's also what's so telling, how many times, you know, you were 53 years old when this happened. There's people, you know, I hear it all the time that are maybe even older than that. So we've been abusing our bodies for 50, 60 years of our life. And then, all you know, we radically change what we eat. We start feeding it all these nutrients. And within weeks, our body is healing itself. And we're seeing all these great
So mine was changes. About 30 days because we started this and I'd purchased tickets to a World Series game at a charity event, not knowing who would be in the World Series. So we started this about the 1st of October and we went to New York City. It was when the Yankees played the Phillies in the World Series. And we went to the first World Series game at Yankee Stadium. And I really hadn't been, I guess I hadn't been paying attention to my image in the mirror. I don't know. But we had gone into this juice shop in New York City and I had a beet juice. So I was making funny faces with the red in my mouth and my wife took a photograph of me. And when I looked at it, what I saw was, oh my gosh, my face is so much thinner. But I lost about 30 pounds in that month, that first month. And I was never hungry. I ate all the time. I was just eating whole food. You know, I would eat, I had broccoli and cauliflower for snacks in the office. And so I'd eat that stuff during the day and eat our meals. But I was never hungry that I remember, and dropped weight really quickly, because it wasn't until I looked at that picture in New York City, and it had been just almost exactly 4 weeks after we started this, I was shocked at what my face looked like.
I think people, regardless of losing weight, though, feel better within weeks and see a drop in, I mean, I see it all the time of drop in blood pressure and just how they feel overall. I mean, certainly losing weight
sometimes
is but some people don't lose. I mean, how many times have we had people that outwardly don't need to lose any weight, look to be healthy, but on the inside are very unhealthy. And by changing their diet, you know, they see rapid changes as far as the way they feel and the energy levels they have and just,
you know. One word of caution, though, is people that are taking antihypertensives, you go on this diet, you really have to look at your blood pressure because you're going to have to come off, you're going to come off those blood pressure pills. So sometimes we hear, well, I started this and I feel really bad.
Sluggish and tired.
And then if I eat something bad, I feel good. And that's because their blood pressure goes back up.
Right.
And they're running too low blood pressure. So you really have to watch that.
And your insulin, checking your blood sugar as well.
And I really suggest when people start this, if they're on blood pressure medications, to get a home blood pressure kit. Take it. Keep a journal of, you know, your blood pressure, you know, first thing in the morning and throughout the day. And make sure then you have information to take to your physician's office to help you kind of wean off that. I want to switch. The second part of this gentleman's question was not just heart disease, but type 2 diabetes. And so
100% reversible.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about
100% reversible.
But the whole idea of just everything I hear in reading the paper when people write into the paper, you know, there'll be little the medical section. And it always, when it comes to diabetes, it's always about watching your sugar, you know, and I just.
Sugar is a side effect.
Yeah. And again, it's kind of like going to the heart disease and, you know, your blood pressure and telling you to watch your salt. I mean, it is a. Blood pressure, your high blood pressure is kind of a side effect of heart disease, and sugar makes your blood pressure go up. I mean, it's
you mean like, salt?
I mean, salt makes your blood pressure go up.
Sugar does too, actually, but.
But, you know, with the diabetes, sugar isn't really the full culprit. It really is.
Sugar really isn't a culprit. It has to do with storage of fat in your cells. Type 2 diabetes is a fat storage problem, and that's why I say it's 100% reversible, because you go on to a truly a low-fat diet, you will reverse your diabetes very quickly, and you don't have to worry about, especially if you go on to a whole food plant-based diet, you don't have to worry about glycemic load and glycemic index, which are hammered into diabetics, because that is a result of the effects of eating animal protein. So if you try your, the diet espoused by the American Diabetics Association, or where you eat lean meat, you're still going to have an issue with your blood sugar because it is the animal protein that causes the issue. So very recently, there was a study done where they looked at the glycemic load and the glycemic index of white rice. White rice has been a staple of the Asian population for as long as we can look back. They've never had an issue with type 2 diabetes until just recently, within the last 2 decades. So prior to that, there was no issue with type 2 diabetes significantly in the Asian population, and all of a sudden they started having a big influx of type 2 diabetes in China, and it has to do with the fact that they eat more animal protein today in China than they've ever eaten. And the recent study was done looking at the glycemic load of white rice, and if you just eat plants and white rice, it has a low glycemic load. If you add animal protein to that, it doubles the glycemic load. And I'm not sure the mechanism by how that happens, but it is an effect that's been observed in studies now, and we know the effect. And it has something to do with the interaction of the animal protein and the carbohydrates.
Well, I want to talk just a second here. We're going to get to talking to more about carbs and certain foods and stuff. But I think we have a caller we want to take.
Absolutely. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hello. Hello, Dr. Conway.
Hi.
Hi. I have recently started on a plant-based diet. And by recently, I mean this is day 2 for me.
That's fantastic.
That is.
You got to start somewhere.
That's right.
Right. So I know... I think what not to eat, but I'm wondering about cooking with olive oil and coconut oil.
Well,
what are your thoughts on that?
If you want to stay, this might be a while. You can stay on the line to ask questions, or we can answer this. It's up
to
you.
I'll just let you answer.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling, Jill.
Thanks, Randy.
Goodbye.
Well, there are no healthy oils.
That was one of the questions I was going to address, so
let's just
jump
get it out
into
there.
It, yep.
Okay, regardless of what you hear about olive oil, it is not a healthy oil. And coconut oil, the miracle of coconut oil is the fact that it's still on the market. It is the most saturated fat that you can take, and it's decidedly not healthy. Now, there are some oils that are healthier than others. And so when you start talking about healthy, a lot of times you're comparing.
Right. I mean, I think that when people are eating, say, trans fats or, you know.
Well, olive oil is going to be a lot better choice
than
a
trans
fat. Well,
sure. It's going to be a totally different. So it's whether you're, you know, Randy's saying the better of bad is not good.
Right. No, it's like what I try to tell people. It's the equivalent of smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day versus 4 packs. What idiot in their right mind would say 3 packs a day is healthy? But that's what you get.
Or even 1 pack.
Well, or even 1 cigarette a day. But, I mean, that's what you're really comparing when you're looking at these cooking oils. So it's a knee-jerk reaction that we've been ingrained that we need to cook with oil. We need to add the oil to recipes. I mean, show me a marinara sauce that doesn't have at least 1/2 cup of oil in it. Or tabbouleh. We used to make tabbouleh. Cracked booger wheat. Lemon juice, parsley, onions, tomatoes, you know. And the initial recipe we had back 20 years ago called for 2 cups of oil.
Right.
And, you know, we added that without even thinking
about it.
And so, you know, that's close to 4,000 extra calories, those 2 cups of oil, that add nothing to that, does not improve the taste, adds nothing to it but extra calories. And so
much less what it's doing to your endothelial cells.
Well, yeah. I mean, the added oil does really significantly interfere with endothelial cell function.
And I think typically, not to be sexist, but I think typically when females ask about olive oil or coconut oil. They're asking from a cooking perspective of how do I cook without olive oil, or how do I cook without oil in general? How do I saute vegetables? What do I put in a recipe instead of olive oil? And I always tell people that Andrea is kind of the master of that, of whether you're wanting to make a dessert or a main dish or even an appetizer, that there are some really simple, easy ways to alleviate oil. You know, one of my favorite things is when you go to a restaurant and you order just hummus as an appetizer.
And they put,
why do they feel the need to pour olive oil on the top?
I don't know.
You know? So.
Well, I do think that when you are used to eating, to, you know, just eating out or eating the standard American diet without thinking, and there is so much oil in every single thing you would consume out there in a restaurant or even store-bought items such as tabbouleh or hummus or any of that, and you're truly, your mouth actually gets coated with that oil.
Yes.
And it is not until you give up the oil and are off of it for probably a good week or so, I guess it takes to really get that out of your mouth, that when the next time you eat something with oil, the feeling of that in your mouth is actually kind of gross.
Gross.
Yes.
I mean, now when we eat something that's just coated with oil like that, it's, and not to say that we don't ever get that. I mean, certainly we eat out and we're going to get added oil when we eat out. It's just inevitable that you're going to get that. But we do not like that feeling that we get after we've had that. So just to touch base on what Randy said, so we are very strict about no added oil in our home for sure. And since we eat 95% of our food out of our house, then I would say we, you know, pretty much do not get any added oil to speak of in our diet. But when you are sauteing vegetables, if you will just put those, which is typically onions, celery, maybe some carrots, mushrooms, when you're sauteing those vegetables, if you just put those in a pan on about a medium heat with a lid, the steam and the heat created in there will actually sweat out those vegetables, and you'll be surprised at how much water comes off those vegetables. In fact, sometimes when I'm cooking big pots with lots and lots of chopped vegetables in there, I almost have to drain the water off there so much. But if you'll let some of that water cook off and then allow those vegetables to kind of brown just a little bit and get caramelized, that's what makes them really tasty. And then you can just put a little added water or vegetable broth in your pan to kind of deglaze those. And then as far as baking, I have done this now for many, many years. And if I'm making some kind of muffin or brownies or cake that might call for added oil, I simply substitute unsweetened applesauce, one for one for oil. So if it's half cup of oil, then I just do half a cup of applesauce. So like his example of tabbouleh, we eat tabbouleh a lot today, and all I simply do is add some lemon juice to my tabbouleh, and it tastes just fine, mm-hmm. and we do not miss the oil at all, because I get asked that a lot. Well, how in the world can you make tabbouleh if you don't have oil? Well, just a little lemon juice is all that's needed, with all the flavoring from the parsley and the mint and the cucumber and the tomatoes. You actually taste the flavor of all those foods so much better without the oil.
Because the oil keeps you from tasting.
It really does. So it's amazing how your taste buds will change when you get rid of that oil in your diet. And then the last piece I want to cover with no added oil is salad dressings. A lot of people say, well, what, you know, how can you possibly make salad dressing without any added oil? And my favorite dressing is just to do a mustard vinaigrette. I use some kind of, whether it's Dijon mustard, spicy brown mustard, and several kinds of maybe some kind of red wine vinegar, or maybe a sweeter vinegar like an aged balsamic. Or there's so many flavored balsamic vinegars on the market now, pomegranate and fig and raspberry, and add those to some mustard, and those make great vinaigrette dressings with no oil necessary at all. So, and just, you know, I encourage people to read labels, because unfortunately everything out there that you buy that's processed contains oil. And to me, some of it may sound trivial, but when you just continue to eat, when you think about all the little things that you're eating throughout the day, if you continue to get a teaspoon here and a tablespoon there, however much, I mean, it just continues to add up over time. And so I really encourage you, you know, like if you're buying store-bought hummus, to buy, there are brands out there that do not have oil added to them. They just have tahini, which is crushed sesame seed. And so that is a healthy fat alternative. So just watch out for all the added oils in food products that you purchase on the shelf.
It's easy to get a lot of added oil and not really be aware of it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's one of the effing F's of nutrition, the fantastic facts of fabulous food. But one of the F's is the fat you eat is the fat you wear. And so for every 100 calories of that fat you consume, your body stores 97. We're fat storage machines. And a lot of that is unnecessary storage because you don't need that for the food to taste good, and you don't need that.
Especially once you get it out of your system and out of your mouth, the coating in your mouth, and you really start tasting food for, you know, the real taste of food, that you'll really truly begin to appreciate not having that oil there.
And I don't do this often, but today sometimes I eat my salad with no dressing because I actually can taste the different vegetables that are in my salad, and I don't necessarily need that dressing to enhance the taste.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with salad, though, what I tell people is you want a little bit of fat. Now, we are talking about added oil. We're not talking about absolutely no fat, because you got to have some of the fat, and we like whole food fat. So like a ground sesame seed or some type of other seed, doesn't even have to be ground.
No, but whole pumpkin seeds, we put that on our salads a lot. But things like sesame seeds, pumpkin seeds, walnuts, almonds, avocado.
In moderation, and we do that to enhance the nutrient absorption of that. It enhances the flavor too, but I mean, I really want to eat a seed or a nut with my salad because it enhances the absorption of the nutrients.
A couple things. I want to go back to the diabetes question, because I know you said it's a fat storage problem, and that doesn't always necessarily mean that someone has to be obese to have diabetes.
That is correct.
And so you can be, you know, some people are just genetically, and good for them, I guess, thin.
Right.
No matter what they eat. You know, you have that friend that you hate that can eat everything under the sun and not gain weight. But that doesn't mean that that person who's still consuming the olive oil, the coconut oil, the fried foods or whatever are not damaging their cells, and that can still get
There are people that are diabetes. Thin that are type 2 diabetics, and it still.
So when you hear a fat storage problem and you think, well, I'm not overweight, right. So why do I have type 2 diabetes?
Well, you have it because the fat is inside the muscle cells and it doesn't allow insulin to get in there. So you have to do something to get that fat out of there. And part of that is exercise. That's very healthy, especially for type 2 diabetics. And the other part of it is
quit adding
oil, because that's going to be stored automatically into those muscle cells. Every little bit of added oil automatically gets stored in those cells, and it decreases your ability to use insulin.
But that includes saturated fat, which comes from animal protein, not just added
oil.
Well,
saturated fat comes from saturated fat, but it comes from animal products primarily. That's where we get most of our saturated fat in our diet. And so it is always associated with animal protein. And if you look at the one single nutrient that's most closely correlated with your risk of disease, it's animal protein. And that shocked me when I came across that information. It actually kind of made me angry, because
right.
It's always been told that I have to have animal protein, sure, to be big and strong and compete as an athlete. And it's just a bunch of BS.
There's a really nice documentary out that's been out for several years now called Simply Raw. and it's reversing diabetes in 30 days. And what they did was they took about a half a dozen people, some with type 1 and some with type 2, from all over the country, and brought them to the True North Healthcare Center in Santa Rosa, California, and treated them. And some of those people were able to drop their insulin needs down to just unbelievably low levels in just a few days. So it's, if you've got type 2 diabetes, it's really a nice documentary to watch.
And if you have the ability to afford it, it's a great place to go to.
Sure, sure.
Well, real quick, we're running out of time here, but we had one more question posted on our Facebook page that I want to address, because I think this is
I just want to be very clear. No added oil.
That's right.
Let's, because this kind of goes along with that. I mean, the question posted was, while eating a plant-based diet, should we watch certain foods in order to lose weight, such as white potatoes?
Well, I would watch the white potatoes go into my mouth.
That's exactly. I only watch them as I'm eating them.
And so I get asked this a lot, especially from people that might be diabetic or be told they were pre-diabetic, because they want to stay away from anything white. So no white rice and no white potatoes. I feel bad for the white potato. I really do.
Yeah.
Well,
it gets a bad rap.
It does.
So where it gets the bad rap is in the glycemic load thing and the glycemic index. And that's something that is valid in people that are eating animal protein. I mean, that system was developed for omnivores dealing with type 2 diabetes. And so do you need to avoid white potatoes? No, you don't need to.
But I was asked this by a lady who was eating sausage biscuits for breakfast.
Therein lies the problem.
She was diabetic and asking me what things she should eat. And when I mentioned white potatoes, she was just astonished and couldn't believe that I would suggest she eat that. But she also told me that she ate sausage biscuits for breakfast.
And the biscuit is probably, besides the sausage, the biscuit is one of the worst things. A processed biscuit has a ton of trans fat. You know it's got added oil to it or added fat to it. It's not going to be a whole food fat.
It's not got butter in it.
Right.
So I want to talk about, for me, from a woman's standpoint, because when we, as my husband mentioned, when we started eating this way, which I did the same day he did, and he said he lost 30 pounds in, you know, 30 days or so, you know, that was not the case for me. And while I didn't need to necessarily lose 30 pounds, I would have liked to have lost 10 to 15 pounds, and I lost nothing when we started. Now, I probably had a little bit healthier diet to begin with than he did as a woman.
I would say a whole lot.
I watched a lot of what I ate, so. But what I didn't know to focus on, what I focused on was not eating animal products. So I made sure, you know, I didn't eat that chicken on my salad, and I didn't add cheese and, you know, things like that. I was not eating meat and dairy, but I was not focusing on eating whole plant foods. So I was still eating a lot of bread, pastas, crackers, chips. While those were all made from plants, one, they had added oil, and two, they were highly processed. And so as we progressed in our journey, and it took several years for us to get to where we are today, but after a couple of years of really, you know, asking why am I not losing the weight, and, you know, and looking at what foods were really healthy, when I decided to really focus on eating a whole food. So instead of a wrap for lunch, I left off the wrap and just ate a whole salad. That's when actually the weight just melted off of me. I mean, when I really focused on getting rid of the pasta, the bread, the crackers, and I eat tons of potatoes. It's one of my, you know, go-to snacks. I tell people all the time, it's not uncommon that you wouldn't find a baked potato in a baggie in my purse. I'm just saying.
I just find it so funny when people start talking about baked potatoes. I go, look, let's just be honest with each other. It's not the potato. It's the cheese and the bacon and the sour cream and the butter. I'm like, do you really think it's the potato?
Nothing wrong.
Plus, we don't store carbohydrates as fat. We store carbohydrates as glycogen. So this whole thing about eating a carb is going to make you fat. Well, it will change how your body responds, how your pancreas responds with insulin, which can change how you store fat. But you don't take a carbohydrate and take it into your mouth and have it end up as fat on your hips. That does not happen.
Right. But for women, I do think eating refined carbs.
Well, for all of us.
And for everybody in general. But you can even eat more than I can from that
standpoint.
This
hormone called testosterone.
Yes.
And that makes a huge difference.
Right.
In our ability to metabolize stuff. And so women's testosterone levels aren't as high as men's. And that is one of the reasons that men seem to lose weight faster on this diet, has to do with the testosterone. And actually, if you really look at the studies, once you start eating plant-based, your testosterone level, men out there, your testosterone level increases. Mm-hmm. And so the more you're plant-based, the higher your testosterone level is going to be. And I think that factors in a lot for men in terms of how they lose weight. Women have to look at, you know, if you eat nuts, you'd want to not eat a lot of them.
Yeah,
nuts,
I think,
and
the
seeds.
The whole food fats are the one thing that I would say is the only food that I really, the whole food,
right.
The only whole food that I probably look at restricting.
A little.
You know, I'm not just, you know, munching down bags of almonds, you know.
Right.
But even so, if I'm if I'm out somewhere or we're traveling, and we're in an airport, my only option, I'm hungry, is a bag of chips or a bag of almonds. I'm going to grab that bag of almonds.
Because, well, we know that now.
I know that now. I mean, those are whole food. They still have fiber in them. They're not processed with a bunch of added oil and junk to them. So they're definitely a healthier option.
And you do have to, especially in airports, watch, because they invariably will try to add oil to roasted nut, which I think is stupid.
Well, now that you can find a lot of times.
Yeah.
Those things. So that was, that's something that I hear a lot from the women that I work with. Sometimes when I'm coaching people and how to eat healthier, I get, you know, women will say, I've heard this, you know, a million times. Well, I've been doing this for 30 days, 60 days, and I haven't eaten meat since, you know, 3 months ago, and I'm just not feeling any better. I'm not losing any weight. And so I get them to focus on, tell me what you are eating. And inevitably, you know, it's
something refined.
It's the tortillas, it's the bread. I mean, it, you know, when you have toast for breakfast and you have a tortilla or two, you know, flour tortillas for lunch, and then you have...
Well, I just want to say there are no healthy flour tortillas that we have been able to find. They just, it's kind of like a unicorn. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. I do. I mean, we do eat some corn tortillas. So when we eat corn, typically is, you know, just made of corn and lime, maybe a little salt. I do prefer them to be organic and non-GMO. But if your only option is a regular corn tortilla versus a flour, I'm going to choose a corn tortilla every time. So those are just some tips and tricks that we've learned over the years when it comes to eating whole foods. So I want to make sure we get back to a couple of housekeeping things here before we sign off.
Next health forum
at Rococo
a week from next Monday,
which is what is that
February 6th
at 6 p.m. We'll be at Rococo North Park Mall. Again, it's free to attend. This is just an informal support group meeting. We would love to have you, but Rococo also does provide a plant-based menu, and you're welcome to order dinner if you like. Then after that, February 25th is our next what we call Nutrition 101 seminar. That's our formal presentation about the science behind why a whole food plant-based diet prevents and reverses chronic disease. Again, that's free of charge, and we do serve a plant-based lunch, but you do have to RSVP, and you can go to plantbasedokc.com to RSVP for this free event, and that's February 25th at noon. Also, this segment that we're airing right now will be on our website, plantbasedokc.com. So if you want to share this with any of your friends. To hear that, you can go on there and listen to a version of that that's been posted on our website. That should be up by tomorrow, I think. And what else have we got going on? We've been in a documentary recently, but
that's
we
right.
are awaiting. We had a premiere for the documentary called Eating You Alive. It has not been out for general release yet, but we're following that to see when that will be, and we will certainly let you know. We're hoping that that might go directly to Netflix or some other kind of digital version that we can share with people. I think it's a very inspiring documentary that you would enjoy.
You can pre-order the DVD right now on eatingyoualive.com. And that is order pre-release now for February. So we feel fairly certain that once it comes out on DVD, it'll probably go to Netflix or something like that too.
And I was really impressed with how they did the documentary.
I was impressed with the people they put in it.
Us? You know, it's one of those things where I got a phone call out of the clear blue saying, hey, we're doing this documentary, and I didn't know them from Adam, but I was impressed when they came out to do the interview with their equipment, and I was really impressed with the final version.
It's
and I'm
really
just going to go out there and say, if the documentary does not impress you, then you are unimpressionable.
That's right. That's right. You need to stay.
You need to check your heart.
Well,
it may have turned to stone.
If you are on Facebook, like I said, we are at Plant-Based OKC on Facebook, but I would encourage you to follow lots of other plant-based groups and doctors out there to continually get this information, to reinforce it, to get recipes and just hear other testimonials. Forks Over Knives is another great documentary. They have a page on Facebook where they always share lots of great information and lots of great recipes. And so there's lots of good information out there to be found.
And don't focus on the differences between various doctors' recommendations that advocate whole food plant-based, because they all have a little bit different take, but the take-home message should be, and it's very consistent, is eating whole plants in their whole form is healthy, and eating animals is unhealthy.
Absolutely.
So until next time, we, in honor of Kathy, we miss you, Kathy, if you're listening. Live life on purpose and with purpose.